Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 303rd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons John Mailer and Robbie Ride. Thanks for both getting hats, being in our hat tier. I think one of you might have snuck in right before we changed the price, so thank you. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow. Today, it's a Matt and Oren episode. We've got a few listener questions, a little bit of catch-up, and also kind of a big, broad topic. And that's the question of, do you need to live in Los Angeles to be a filmmaker in 2022
edition? Yeah.
Yeah.
We covered this topic ad nauseum, and the answer was always yes, absolutely yes. I mean, you don't need to, but it was
yes, 1,000 times yes. And now it's a little more complicated than that, so we're going to dig into it.
Yeah, spoiler alert, the answer is no, but maybe yes.
It's a more nuanced answer this time around rather than like, no duh, do it.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about other things. But before we get to any of that stuff, I'm dying to know, Matt, what have you been working on lately?
Yeah, you know, I just shot a new spot that we're hopping into post on. It's going to be super fun. I shot it over this last weekend due to some client availabilities, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm coming out of it fresh. But what's interesting about this one is that for various reasons, we decided to shoot it on an iPhone. The most important reason, I think, is that it was meant to feel like to influencer, vlogger, UGC, user-generated content type people were creating the video themselves.
So it was not because you forgot to bring the camera.
I did not forget to bring the camera, no.
Melanie, did you go to the camera house? Nope.
And this is it's an increasingly popular thing. I did another campaign for a big car brand where one of the characters was meant to be an influencer, and we intercut her footage, the footage that she was shooting on her phone as well. So this isn't my first time shooting with iPhones or any sort of phone. And I thought we could unpack it a little bit, talk about it a little bit. Oren, you've done that as well, right? Have you shot things on phones that are meant to look like phones? I know the reverse is true, where every once in a while you'll shoot something on your phone and then it'll end up in the spot.
I mean, the problem with me personally is my cinematographical instincts are just so absurdly good that I can't shoot anything that doesn't look cinematic
incredible
on my iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, but obviously I'm joking. Have I shot stuff? Yeah, I've shot a lot of stuff where it's like, you know, our A-cam is an Alexa or whatever, red, and we're shooting someone holding their phone, and then we want to cut to what they're
the
filming.
Footage of, right. Yeah,
and we use that. And it's funny, I did this campaign, that Godzilla thing, and it was like Godzilla's on set and he's like losing his shit and like the whole crew is filming him going ballistic. And so we had, you know, our grip guy like holding a phone and filming Godzilla. And I just wanted to give the phone to the actor to film Godzilla. And of course our cinematographer, who might be listening to this.
Kind of mad about it. Yeah.
Not only kind of mad about it, he's like, well, look, if we're going to film with the iPhone, we need to use Filmic Pro. We need to shoot 24p. There's going to be all these sync issues. We're going to need to shoot like the best quality possible, the best bit rate, the best, all that stuff. And I was like, okay, but I kind of just want it to look like an iPhone. So the compromise was the actor gets shot it, you know, some takes, and then we did one last take.
And then
take.
You had a safety with the, with the cinematographer.
Or the cinematographer.
So this is a thing that I think we're doing more and more. And I think especially commercials, it's very trendy to have stuff that's meant to feel like a TikTok or influenced by TikTok or whatever. And so over the years, I've kind of developed a few pretty hard rules about what I think is good, quote unquote, social content in this sort of category. And people don't always agree with me. I think it's a kind of a funny and sort of controversial thing. But it kind of comes from all of those conversations that you were talking about before, because like people will be like, well, you could just like, we'll use the Alexa and we'll plan on cropping the sides off so it looks vertical. And it'll be on the cinematographer's shoulder. They'll be operating, but we'll just have the actor put their hand on the cage so it looks like pretending they're holding it. And
I've done that so many times.
And the Filmic Pro thing, basically you learn that there's a lot of little notches, little steps, degrees in between truly faking it, using a cinema-grade camera with fancy lenses and all that stuff, all the way down to just literally using your phone. And
It's literally never good any fake way.
I'm so glad you said that. Literally never good. What it comes down to is deciding what good, quote unquote, means to you, right? And so cinematographers tend to believe that good is a clean, high resolution image that has enough latitude with their bit rate and with their color space to grade it the way they want it to, and that all of the camera movement is fluid and that things are framed well, et cetera, et cetera. All of the kind of the cornerstones of good cinematography, quote unquote, are, you know, baked into them from a young age. And I kind of constantly am like trying to buck against just the idea of good and under these circumstances, because to your point, Oren, good in this case means accurate to the images that we are used to seeing every single day nonstop for the last 10 years. We look at stuff that's shot on phones nonstop. So we subliminally understand the way that its lens looks, the way that it shifts white balance all over the place, the way it shifts exposure, the algorithm that's recoloring everything on the fly. All of that stuff we've just internalized. And so you can recognize when it's fake. The weight of the camera, the way an actor moves it around, all of that stuff, we just have been trained nonstop for literally a decade to recognize it instantly. So anything that takes you even a baby step away from that, in my mind, is less good.
Yeah. I mean, I have things that I'm willing to compromise on. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care for the white balance or exposure shifts or super blown out highlights. Like, But I believe that on the iPhone, you can lock the white balance and you can lock the exposure. And so those two things, I think, are, mm-hmm. because you can do it just as a, you know, with a regular camera app, I think they're acceptable things to do that do make the image look better. Mm-hmm. And I do like shooting, you know, in 4K or... Mm-hmm.
You see, you said better, right?
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. That I think that, like, again, it's what does better really mean?
Oh, right. Well, yeah. I guess to me, it's just like not distracting. But the funny thing is, well, so there are a couple movies that come to mind that had a lot of like kind of, you know, DIY, like found footage. Obviously, there's mm-hmm. like Blair Witch, but even like Chronicle or, and I think Blair Witch was actually very found, like they shot it on film and, you know, 8mm or whatever.
That's not a good comp anymore, but like Cloverfield maybe.
Yeah, Cloverfield and Chronicle are the two where, you know, I think you can shoot on a Red or an Alexa or something or Venice with zoom lenses and fake that as like a camcorder, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's okay. And then also the truth is I think most influencers, at least the ones that I watch on mm-hmm. YouTube, don't shoot on phones. A lot of them shoot with the Sony A7S. Or a handy cam of some sort. Yeah, DSLRs. So it's not like it has to be a phone, but there is a difference between an Alexa with master primes or these like super mm-hmm. heavy lenses that makes a difference. And so to me, those are there's kind of three main things, and I'm just arbitrarily saying that, so I hope it adds up to three, but number one that you mentioned is the movement, like the mm-hmm. movement of the camera and how, where you can put it and how you hold it is huge. That's just the thing that an Alexa is never going to look like an iPhone or even like a DSLR. Number two is autofocus. As much as cinematographers hate autofocus, it's actually incredibly useful when you're shooting yourself. You know, when you're walking into a room and you turn the camera and you say, look at this wall, and then come back to my face. You need the autofocus to work, and having an AC and all these other people involved that are anticipating the focus racks, I think, makes it feel fake. And then, yeah,
most of the time, if it's truly a phone, everything's in focus.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously there's the cinema mode and stuff and iPhone 13 there.
Yeah. And the algorithm is blurring things, but for the most part.
No, but there's like a macro. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to some degree, but there's also, just from a performance standpoint, there's a difference between a person holding the phone and interacting with it and being in control of the shot and somebody like putting their hand on a matte box and pretending to do it, and that dance that you need to do with the camera operator and the performer. So I think those three things are why I would choose the phone over the camera. And actually, I just did all these things for Disney World a few months ago where it was supposed to look like this mom was filming herself and her family. And we shot it on the compromise with the DP was like, we'll shoot on the Sony a7S III. Mm-hmm. We rigged it vertically, so it's a 9x16 frame. And it was okay. It was fine. But I felt like I even did the rehearsals with the phone because I wanted the actor, I wanted to see where she would move it and how she would hold it and how she would feel about it. But the one thing that's hard with the phone is lighting, not in terms of making the light look good, but in terms of keeping light stands and light fixtures out of the shot.
Mm-hmm. Crew members, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you have a camera operator that is making sure that the bad things aren't entering frame, it's helpful. But yeah, I love the iPhone. I love I love the image it makes. I think there are some issues with the frame rates like these that are inconsistent with themselves and sometimes audio sync issues, but in general, I just think it's like such a cool tool. And I think it's way more stable than, it's literally more stable than the best Steadicam I've seen. It's like,
I think we're talking about two different things though, right? Like there's good in terms of cinematic quality, and then there's verisimilitude to what is self-shot. And I guess I just am saying that over the years, I've just decided, just don't fake it. Just get, if you want it to be a camcorder, just pull out a camcorder. Just go rent one. You know, there are places that have them and you can source them. And yeah, it's a pain in the butt, but like the limitations of that sensor, for instance, or the speed of the zoom or all of that stuff, you know, you just spend so much time trying to figure out how to replicate it that unless there's a genuinely good reason, you should just use the real thing. And so that brings me to my second point that I think is worth talking about, is that especially in like a commercial environment where there are multiple stakeholders, a lot of people need to be seeing the image that you're creating. It's not as simple as just like looking over somebody's shoulder. Shooting on a phone is in many ways much harder from a logistical standpoint than just renting a regular old camera that you can then wire up and transmit the feed to remote clients and Video Village and hair and makeup and all the other people who need to just be keeping an eye on the image. It's a lot. You know, you end up spending a lot of money on all of that camera support. Either you're lucky and you've had producers who have done these shoots before and realize like, oh no, it's not something to underestimate. But it would be simple for someone who hasn't done them before to think that they don't need as many ACs or as many people, like all of the support elements, basically, of like keeping things charged, swapping batteries, keeping an eye on things. Downloading media takes a long time, and really getting that image out to other people is a pain.
That is the one thing that those cameras and phones don't have, is the monitoring capabilities. And I know there's like a lot of different pieces of software and tricks and ways to get around it, and I've worked with systems where as soon as you hit stop, it uploads the file to like some cloud service. But
that just requires an expert to be monitoring it, because it's going to glitch out halfway through the day.
And yeah, but
six people in Chicago who need to see it or whatever.
Yeah, you know? You're saving a camera assistant and stuff, where like no one needs to pull focus for you. So maybe that person is
sure
is there, but
right. But I'm saying it would be easy as a producer to be like, oh, well, no one's pulling focus, so I can cut right, that person. Right.
I will say, especially on a commercial, if it's kind of a short form, like a 30-second commercial or something, it's not the end of the world to do a take or two and then walk over to the client and just play it back right off the phone and have people see it. Mm-hmm. It's not, you don't get the detail that you would get on a big monitor that everyone's watching, but mm-hmm. yeah.
I've used AirPlay with an Apple TV. And that, I think, is maybe the best solution. It gets a little tricky with 4K, and, you know, there are problems here and there. But on that car job that I did, that was our solution. It worked great.
Yeah, that's cool. I do want to rewind a hair for a second, though, about, you know, I think there are two things here. The thing I think that you're talking about is whether something feels authentic, you know, whether we can cheat mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. like somebody shooting with the phone with a much mm-hmm. bigger, more expensive cinema camera. But to me, that is like the question that we had like 5 years ago. You know, Jordan Brady always talks about, it's like, if we want to do a hidden camera, security camera shot, let's just get a real security camera and shoot it on that. And, you mm-hmm. know, if we want it to have a VHS look, let's get an old like VHS camera. So to me, that's one thing, the authenticity. But the other thing that has become actually more important to me than the authenticity, mainly due to the fact that everyone is shooting on everything, it doesn't really matter, is the physicality of the camera. And when I did mm-hmm. stuff, you know, at Disney World, when I did stuff just now, I did this campaign in Missouri, kind of a tourism campaign. The reason my iPhone shots end up making it into the cut is because I can mm-hmm. run around with that iPhone and I can take the actors aside mm-hmm. and I can do all these shots so fast and so nimbly, and I can move it and we can laugh and be silly. And from a docu style approach, it's just so much easier to get dynamic shots. And I remember talking to my DP, and I showed him, I was like, look at this cool shot of whatever, some people having like a lightsaber fight in front of the Millennium Falcon or something. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, like honestly, for us to get that same shot, we would need like a Dutch head, a jib arm, mm-hmm. a this, a that, mm-hmm. like, and he was actually kind of yeah. bummed, because I felt like he was like, yeah, your shot is just like way more dynamic than my shot.
It's cool. Also, like they're so small and so light that, like, you know, there were shots where, you know, we had like a gimbal and this and that, and I was like talking to the DP and I was like, okay, I want it to start here and fly through their arms as it's spinning on a corkscrew and then pan up to the sky or whatever. And it was like, oh, none of this gear works, but you could just do that with your hand like you just showed me.
Just
and that's what we did.
Helmet cam it. Just stick it on your head and run around.
Yeah, truly though. Truly. Like that's
Did you shoot on the iPhone 13 Pro?
We did. Yeah. So, and I was pretty specific about that because I love that wide angle and I love the macro capabilities. And so we did some product shots that would be impossible or would take a T-Rex or some sort of periscope rig or a probe or something like that.
What's a T-Rex? I'm not familiar with that one.
A T-Rex is like a periscope. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So basically, if your camera is, you know, big and bulky and you want to get a bug's eye view, if you want to get basically scraping the floor, you can get a rig that is a network of mirrors basically in tubes to get it so that the lens feels much lower down than it is. It's great for shooting animals, for instance, which is how I know about it. But and also I'm sure people have seen the probe lens, which is relatively new in the grand scheme of things, but is all over like Instagram and stuff, and like is long and narrow, and so you can stick it into a bottle or
a butt,
you know. Sure, yeah,
my proctologist butt, loves them.
I think yeah it's it's a probe. I have thought about like you know, they have like those fiber like flexible cameras that like you'll get ads for, like, yeah, you know, clean your ear out with this
yeah
camera.
They use them for like plumbing.
Did I use that? Yeah. I was like, that could be incredible.
Wait, so did you shoot vertically for your shoot?
We did not. We shot horizontally. And we also shot 24 frames a second, which I have mixed feelings about. I
kind of
wanted the phone on an iPhone, it defaults to 30. You can change it to 24,
but
no problem.
But not in 4K, right? Actually, maybe you can in 4K. Yeah, just not in cinema mode. You can in 4K. The cinematic mode.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't shoot cinematic mode at all.
Right.
Yeah. But the thought process, and this is the last we can all say about it, it was important that it was iPhones because you could see the characters using their phones.
Like there's mirrors?
No, there were two characters, each vlogging. So one had a gimbal and the other had, so one was in selfie mode sometimes and the other one had the gimbal. So it was like, you know, they had their phones out all the time. The thought process became, what would these characters do? Would they download Filmic Pro? Would they change it from 30 to 24 frames a second? Would they shoot in 4K or 1080? You know, that sort of stuff, basically. And because they were meant to be, you know, the kind of vloggers that are nerdy and did, you know, go buy a, you know, a gimbal, for instance, at Best Buy or whatever, it would be okay for them to change it to 24.
Yeah.
Is how I justified it.
Yeah. I feel like that stuff is okay, too. I remember...
To me, though, it's all the fabric of, like, it's all subliminal. Like, it's the same sort of argument as, like, does any of this really matter? And it's kind of like, well, yes and no.
What's funny to me is, like, in a pre-pro meeting, you know, so we have these meetings, right, mm-hmm. before we shoot commercials to tell the client what our plan is. And, you know, we try to impress mm-hmm. them with, like, we have this awesome camera that they shot GoldenEye with or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. Like, you can... It's equally easy to sell we're shooting on an iPhone as it is we're shooting on an Alexa. Like mm-hmm. you can, like I've said both of these things in those meetings and it's usually gone over pretty well, which is I've said, and we're going to make this super authentic. You know, they would shoot on iPhones. We're going to shoot on iPhones. It's going to be so real. There's a subliminal thing where you can feel it. You know, mm-hmm. we're all, it's like so ubiquitous that like we're going to take the real tool. We're going to get the best version of it, but it's going to be awesome. We're going to shoot a lot of takes. We can still edit it. We can still fix it, but it's going to feel so real and so raw and so natural, right? That's why we're shooting on iPhones. And you can just as easily say like, look, the reality is we're making premium content here, right? We're making, this is, mm-hmm. gonna be you mm-hmm. want people to buy Coca-Cola and so we want that
we're not skimping
yeah we
on
want it
image.
To be
yeah,
that
yeah.
Coke red to be red we're not gonna gamble it on like some random smartphone image mm-hmm. that turns the red orange or whatever you know mm-hmm.
Yeah so this is an authentic image just elevated honestly though that's evidence of your level of experience of how many times you've gone through a meeting like this. But I think that the creative should drive it, right? I think there's definitely plenty of circumstances where it's totally fine to, you know, intercut, like mix the media or let it all be a cinema camera or let it all be a phone. And it just depends on what the creative is asking for, basically. And what I chafe at is when we're trying to do one thing, but because of some internalized standards of what good is or isn't harm the image in order to make it adhere to those standards.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, we all know this, but at the end of the day, good is the camera is just like one tiny part of what 100%. Makes something good or not. And, you know, if you have the performances and the script and story and mm-hmm. whatever, you know, the making something that piques people's interest, it just like it doesn't.
Yes, yeah, far far more important.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is like it's equally easy to set it at 24 or 30 frames per second. And our job is to sweat the details. Our job is to think through and improve in any way we can any of those things. We're not spending any extra money.
Now let's take a quick word from a potential sponsor, and we'll be back with our main topic.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, Matt, we got a question from a listener named Kyle Fossey.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Kyle, thanks for writing us. If you have a question, if you want to be like Kyle, drop us a line at justshootitpod@gmail.com.
Yeah, so Kyle asked us a question, and it was, I live about 3 to 4 hours outside of New York City, and I feel like I'm at the point where I can begin directing small-time commercials. With New York being such a big market, I was wondering if there's any chance production companies would be looking to hire directors from the surrounding areas, or are there so many people working that they're only interested in hiring locals? My thought is that it would be easy enough to do pre-production meetings via Zoom before driving down to the city for a few days to direct. Does that ever happen? If so, what would be the first steps in reaching out?
Love this question. So many things to unpack here. There's kind of two big parts that I think we need to address. The first being...
Do you need to live in New York City?
Do you need to direct to live in New York City? And this... Right, correct. And the second being, how do I break into working with big market companies, basically. So I want to answer the second first, because I think the other question, I think, leads us into the rest of the episode. So yeah, I mean, the wonderful thing about New York is that there are going to be big old companies, big fancy agencies, big fancy production companies, the ones that we've all heard of and dreamt of. And there's also going to be, medium-sized and smaller ones, right? And so is it going to be super competitive because there's so many talented filmmakers living in New York? Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, as we talk about on the show, if that's a deterrent for you, then stop listening to the show and go to grad school for something different, I think.
Yes, honestly, art history.
You know, yeah. Philosophy.
Yeah.
So I think that the tricky thing about that, though, is that perhaps there are other opportunities outside of these competitive markets that you should go ahead and like level up on a little bit. And it looks like Kyle is doing that already. So that I think that you're headed in the right step there. Do that work that is available to you with your pre-existing relationships. And then, you know, like it sounds like he's thinking about doing, try and leverage that into building relationships with these other companies, basically. But like, well, I guess my point is like, you can't do the small town jobs, do some really, which is really great work, but not with Fortune 500 companies, and then hope to sign at one of these big production companies with the people that you really look up to. That's just a very big leap. And maybe you can, but I think, you know, there are more incremental steps in between there.
Right. Agreed. I mean, so the reason I do think these two questions are kind of related to each other is because from my point of view, it really does not matter at all where you live for commercial directing. Most commercial directors I know that are regular working commercial directors.
Let me clarify, to do the work, it does not matter where you live.
I'm saying I don't think it matters in any capacity, and I'm to
get the work and to do the work.
Yeah, and I'm going to go into it. Okay. Many directors that we know have reps in the U.S. They have reps in mm-hmm. Europe. They have reps in Canada. Some people, maybe even on this podcast, have people that are representing us in Eastern Europe and Russia, potentially Siberia. So that alone should be the proof that where you live actually doesn't matter in terms of getting repped by a production company. And
to that point, there are plenty of LA directors who live in Palm Springs, who live in San Diego, who live in Arrowhead.
Yeah. I know two that live in Oregon, but they are quote unquote LA based directors. And so obviously in 2022, this is different because you were kind of faking it, back in the day, but now there's no more faking it. So this is good and this is bad. Why is it good? Because you can live anywhere and work anywhere, right? You just get on an airplane. I mean, hoping that no government entities are banning you because of where you live from flying to where you need to shoot. With that aside, you can live anywhere and just fly for the shoot and then fly back. And I think both of us have done even remote shoots and remote scouting and remote everything. So I actually recently had a job where they wanted to fly me out. It's kind of a complicated, long flight with many legs to go scout. And I was like, well, I've just did all these things during COVID where we scouted remotely. Can you just send someone with like FaceTime and we can scout a bunch of places remotely? Like, I don't actually have to be there.
Save a hotel room.
Yeah, and a flight.
Ticket.
Just add all that money back into my rate, please. Thank you. So that's why it's good, right? Because you can live anywhere and work anywhere. Obviously, there's time zones and you might have to get on a call. So it's a lot harder if you live in Russia and are trying to do a 3 p.m. call Pacific time. But, you know, East Coast, West Coast, that's all. It doesn't really matter. Canada, Mexico, it's all fine.
Yeah. Basically, from a post-COVID era on, we'll be prepping over video chat for the majority of our jobs.
Yeah, unfortunately. So the reason...
Wait, oh, sorry, hold on, pumping the brakes. Why do you say unfortunately?
Because I like to be with people when I'm working. I think creativity is a lot better as a group sport. And I think we have another listener question we're going to get to that relates to this. But that's, to me, my biggest like kind of downer of COVID is that I think there are some geniuses, Thoreau style, you know, that go out into the woods and write amazing novels on themselves on their own.
I think we're just, you know, I am an introvert extrovert, which sounds like something that doesn't make any sense, but it is real actually. And it took me a long time to realize this about myself, but like, I'm happy to be alone or just like with me and my wife for frankly years at a time.
You're a hermit and I love going to Starbucks and talking to a bunch of random people.
Yeah, exactly. And you are an extrovert, right? So like, I'm happy to just like plunk away on my screenplay and then go shoot the thing, and I'm okay with like the performance of being a director, but socially I'm happy to just be alone.
But also like the whole reason I'm here in LA and working in film is because I spent 4 years as an engineer in Silicon Valley working with the same five dudes every single day. And all I wanted to do was like go meet other people and have new experiences and work in different locales.
And you liked those five dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
They're great.
It wasn't like the like five lamos. It was like, oh, I like you.
I mean,
and also
they're all
like
engineers.
Well.
So there's like a there's a maximum coolness that any
I
of
do
them can
think
hit.
You are probably literally the funniest engineer.
That is definitely not true. But yeah, I craved like not just being with my computer all the time, even though I'm a fairly technical person and I enjoy problem solving and puzzles. You know, I prefer to do them with people than by myself. And so COVID has kind of like found a way to adapt filmmaking into a, you know, an individual sport. And I find it much less fun. When I'm not with people. And that's why I love being on set. I love being on shoots and I love traveling. But the pre-pro, the like treatments, the like, you know, I enjoy making my 3D renders of the set or whatever. But I would enjoy them more if I was in a room with a bunch of people and they could come over and we could exchange ideas. So anyhow, long story short, I think you can kind of live anywhere for commercial directing. And part of the nature of commercial directing is it's like 1, 2, 3, 4 days of shooting and a lot of prep and a lot of post and a lot of pitching and a lot of all this other stuff that you can do remotely. It's different for a TV show or a feature where you really do need to come together for a certain period of time to shoot your 20 days of the feature or your, you know, few months of the TV show or whatever. So, but for commercials, that's the plus. The minus is now you're competing against every single person in the world for a job.
Well, to be fair, that has always been the case, I would say. You know, I think that we've been traveling well before the pandemic to different markets to shoot and pitched against people who were local or who were New York or LA or London based, all over the place. So it's not that, I don't think the competition has gotten stiffer. I think that when you fly out has changed a little bit.
Yeah, that too. But I think competition has gotten stiffer because our other topic that we talked about, shooting on the iPhone, I do think nowadays a production company can see someone on YouTube or an influencer. Like we've seen, articles about, hey, on TikTok, I did product videos and now I'm repped by Smuggler or whatever, some huge production company because they saw my videos. So now you're not just against the other people that want to be commercial directors. You're up against everyone in the world that's making really cool visual work, whether it's on Instagram or TikTok or TV or music videos. And so it's a good thing because you can get inspired by all this stuff too. But you know, as a commercial director, if you want to get signed by a company, you need to prove to them that there's something about you that is just really interesting, that you're really easy to pitch, that like, oh, this person, look at this video they made about this avocado.
It's got so many views, all that stuff. Yeah. Well, I think that brings up the other point though, right? Is that the whole point of film festivals or moving to LA, all the things that you're kind of lamenting is like, really, we're talking about building relationships. We're talking about networking. And the internet has bypassed that in a couple ways, but going viral or like having your reel online has facilitated and opened up the market in a way that's really good, because not only is it that just democratizes things a little bit more, basically. So more people have access to the gatekeepers, basically. That being said, it's been a minute since you and I had to like truly break in. I don't know what I would do to break in if I did not live in a major market. And here's why. There are people out there who have a knack for making the things that are really flashy, really splashy, get a lot of attention. Stuff that's gonna go viral, right? Stuff that's gonna get shared around. And that's part of the job, but that's not all of the job, right? And so it's hard to plan on going viral. That can't be the only way that you build your resume. And so the other way that you do that is by meeting young producers and doing them a favor, working your way up, PAing on something, making a friend, collaborating on a thing together and getting better and better incrementally, step by step by step, right? Like if you're a genius and you can just like make cool stuff in your dorm room or whatever, that's awesome. Please go do that, and I'm excited to see your work. But I think that there are a lot of people who just need to take those baby steps, and it's pretty hard to take those baby steps without other people to collaborate with, basically, and to show that to. You know, if you don't go viral but you still show your cool video, your cool music video to your producer friend, then they can say, oh hey, I'd love to help you out, like let's make something else together or whatever, you know. And that doesn't take 100 million views to get the right person's attention.
Yeah, and I personally don't think you need to, that going viral matters at all. It's helpful if someone's like, oh, I've seen your thing before.
Right, but to your point of like, how does a producer sell to their EPs? Oh, I think we should sign this person.
There's a few different ways, right? I honestly, I've evolved on this topic, and I don't think that view count like literally has anything to do with it or followers. I think it's different if with an actor potentially. But I think
I think that the young filmmakers that you're describing, though, I think view count does have a lot to do with it.
I think the view count helps them get discovered, you know, because other people right. will see them. But I don't think in pitching, I honestly think the work does speak
yes,
for itself.
Then we agree. Yeah, but I'm saying the discovery is the thing that you're bypassing by moving to a major market.
Right. You're helping meet people that you can show things to. If you work in a place where there isn't any film community or it's just literally just like friends making videos together, you can show them as many mm-hmm. things as you want. They're not going to hire you to direct a Nike commercial.
Correct. That's exactly my point. Like the work being equal.
Right.
You know, how do you connect with the people who can help elevate your
yeah.
career?
And there's also, obviously, there's a lot of pathways to being a working director. Probably the most obvious one is you write stuff and you make it, and then it gets into film festivals or whatever. People discover you and you get bigger jobs. But the other one that a lot of us have done, including myself, is you crew on other people's shoots, whether it's in post, whether it's in production, like you said, PA, grip, whatever, produce, right? And if you are in a market where there's a lot of people doing that, it's just much, much easier to learn from great filmmakers when you're in this market. So yes, I think there's that value is undeniable from being mm-hmm. in a big market, but the value of and something that we've talked about on the podcast a lot of the, hey, I just like walked down the street and I ran into this producer that was with my friend. And I mentioned that I had an idea about singing dogs and they were mm-hmm. like, oh, we're doing this musical streaming service. Like that thing that was so that was to me the reason to be in LA, which is you get to meet all these people that are being creative and doing mm-hmm. cool things. In the days of COVID, I find it not really happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder, I agree, right? So that was my point of like how do you get the work versus how do you do the work? Doing the work is remote and you're bummed out about it. How you get it is more complicated. Do you think, though, that some of our perspective is colored by the fact that we have kids? Because I think that we're both out and about less and more cautious because we have an unvaccinated person in our household, and there are people who are living more socially than do you and I are at this current moment. I picked up dinner last night on my way home from the mm-hmm. shoot, and the order wasn't ready, so I was like stuck there for like 20 minutes, and I can't tell you how many freaking college kids were just like rolling up to my favorite Mexican place and just like, I don't know, probably 20 kids all I think maybe in the same party who are all going to like go meet on the patio together. And like, you know, mask wearing was like, you know, clearly to be polite, and like they were living their lives is what I'm getting at. And like, certainly not all in the same household or whatever. And I was jealous anyway. All of which is to say, Kyle, you know, 2022 in major markets, New York and LA in particular, COVID's still a pretty rough situation for us. And so circle back in 6 months. But in the meantime, do that work and stay
safe. And no matter what, if you want to work as a commercial director, you need to show people that you can direct commercials regardless of where you live. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the focus should be way less on where you live and way more on what materials you can show. And if you don't feel like you have them, then make them, you know, like,
yeah, if you have an incredible reel, if you had six specs that look and feel like they should be on TV or any of the best specs you've ever seen in your life, it doesn't matter where you live.
Even if you had three of the best specs and one okay spec. Real quick, I'm just going to read an email from another listener, Ryan Kindle, that is kind of related to this. We've kind of covered most of what he talked about, but I'm going to read it real quick. And he says, that episode about a freelancer schedule, having kids, and having an accountability group really resonated with me. I don't have much of a tribe when it relates to filmmaking. For me personally, I think a Patreon tier that is like a support or accountability group would be extremely helpful. An ongoing Discord or Slack group and maybe a monthly virtual hangout to discuss projects. Something specific to feature filmmaking would be great. Just hearing that other filmmakers are going after it is incredibly motivating. Thanks, Ryan, for that comment. I don't know that Matt and I have the bandwidth to set up like the Discord and Slack group and all that stuff. As we are barely handling our current like Discord and Slack obligations. I don't know about you, but I only use like the Slack web client, and I'm just like, I can't handle
the office
Slacking
that I'm working with mostly now. No one Slacks. It's all text.
But
I miss it actually.
But I do think Ryan's comment is just like proof that a lot of us in the film community, in the arts, in the creative community feel a little bit like we're in a vacuum. Like all we hear about is what's mm-hmm. like on Deadline or Twitter or Facebook or whatever about mm-hmm. what is going on. And I know I think I said this 2 years ago when COVID started, but there's still this feeling of like disappointment that you're not doing as much as everybody else is doing. from a creative standpoint. So
I think even worse, because we've been depressed for 2 years. Do you know what I mean? I think like the FOMO is always real, but I think adding just like a level of arrested development that we're feeling because our career slowed down because things weren't shooting as much or whatever, you're depressed and so you didn't get as much writing done as you wanted, or your kids are at home and so you can't focus, or all of that stuff, I think, that everybody is dealing with. I think artists have, suffered from, but then also, unlike plenty of other artists, we have multiple websites telling us about how our friends just,
got nominated for Oscars.
Got an Oscar. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I hate those friends.
Yeah. I love the combination of like when someone will brag about their friend who's nominated for an Oscar, and also I know that they are super depressed because of it as well. It's like a very funny combo to me that is uniquely Los Angeles, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a weird time, but we'll make it through. I'm curious a year from now to listen back to this episode. I just think the last month has been kind of a bummer, and it's like hard to plan your short film or your spec or rework out your website and do all these things.
I had a short that was going to go in March. Yeah.
When like literally half of the commercial shoots I hear, more than half, are getting canceled because too many people are testing positive. So hopefully it's the beginning of the end. That's the mm-hmm. version of the narrative that I am choosing to believe, but I'm doubtful.
I think it is, actually. I truly think it is. I think this is the beginning of the end, and it's just a crappy, it's always darkest before the dawn, Oren.
Is it? Well, Matt, is there a high note we can end on?
I think you want to hang out and endorse with me?
Sure, I'll endorse.
Unpaid endorsements.
So I've actually got a very apropos endorsement that's going to tie it all together. Are you a Righteous Gemstones fan, Oren?
Honestly, my wife loves it, and I went to Palm Springs over the weekend just to get away, and we tried to watch it last night in the dark while both of our kids were like sleeping, next to us, or like around us, mm-hmm. trying to not wake them up, which, by the way, it's actually wouldn't be a bad endorsement, but you can connect two sets of AirPods to your MacBook.
I did know that, and that is legitimately cool, especially for circumstances like you're describing.
Yeah, so we could watch it together. Cool. And we were watching season 2, episode 1, mm-hmm. 15 minutes in, I was completely knocked out, and my wife, like episode 3, I guess there's some funny scene about a Tesla or something, and she's just like cracking up so loud. I don't know why I can't stay awake.
Boy, I love that show. I love that show. It is created by Danny McBride, who also stars on the show, and it's the third HBO show that, you know, he and David Gordon Green and Jody Hill have made together, the other two being vice principals and Eastbound and Down. Anyway,
Foot Fist Way? Oh, no, that's
Foot
not...
Fist Way is their indie film that they shot back home and kind of launched their careers because Will Ferrell and Adam McKay saw it and became obsessed with it. But those guys are all they're all film school buddies who came out to LA, and Danny McBride had like a big Hollywood movie career. He was like making stuff with Seth Rogen and all those guys, and you know, he's in Tropic Thunder, he's in Apatow movies and all that stuff, and he tends to play these kind of like big dumb crass guys. I heard an interview from 2019 on that show Good One that I've talked about on this show before. That's the Vulture Comedy Podcast, where they talk to comedians about their process, basically. And they talk about The Righteous Gemstones. And it's just a really awesome interview. That's my endorsement. But it illuminates a few things. One, he's super smart. Danny McBride is so smart, so thoughtful, and just kind of explains all of the ways in which his work is rooted in truth and how he comes up with surprising stories and how he's not confined by genre and that he's trying to constantly sort of surprise people and figure things out. And it was like such a good, reinvigorating interview. And also, he lived in LA for 20 years, moved to Charleston just recently.
Oh, really?
And so... he's living the dream, man. You know, makes movies with his best friend, or TV shows with his best friends every summer or whatever, and just gets to make the wildest, weirdest stuff. And I think he is genuinely underappreciated. He's truly a genius. And if you're not watching Righteous Gemstones, get on it. But that show is rooted in ideas and themes that are big and relatable, even though it's so absurd and so heightened. It's essentially like a family comedy, you know, about loss and patriarchy and belief and all of that other stuff too. But yeah, I really love it. So my endorsement is the Danny McBride interview on Good One. Oren, what you got, buddy?
I got two bad ones. First one is a very annoying one, but if you have ever thought of getting a Tesla, you should pre-order it now. Do you know that it takes, if you order it now, it will take like almost a year for you to get it.
Oh, boy.
Is
that because of the general car shortage, or is that still going? Is that over? I know that it was hard to buy a car there for a minute.
Yeah, so it's that the two. It's all the shortages, but also just Tesla being Tesla's being so in demand because they literally are the best car like ever made. Not from a production quality level, but from a just like it's just like a different experience than
they're
any
pretty
other
neat.
Vehicle.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you want one, then you only have to put down a $250 deposit to save it, and then you'll get it like a year from now. And even if the price goes up, you don't have to pay the extra money. But the other thing, and the reason it's like a general endorsement, is if you don't even want the car, the odds of you being able to sell it for way more than you paid for it are like so high. Right now, any used Tesla of any version... I'm not sure about the S, but the 3, the Y, the X, you can sell a used one for 10% more than a new one costs because they're so in demand. So
you're saying if I put $250 down now, that I could just resell it if I didn't want it in a year? That's interesting.
Like, I mean, you would, if I were you, I would get like the most, like the one that most people would want, like a Model Y.
A popular one. Yeah.
Yeah. Not like in a weird color, just like all the base colors.
Yeah. What happens if I can't sell it? Like you can't return a car, right?
Well, you can just not take it, the car from Tesla. You lose the $250. You can try to transfer your reservation, but I think that's like a little hard to do. But like right now, if there's this website, Carvana. Do you know about that?
Mm-hmm. I do.
If you go to Carvana and you just search for Model Y. I mean, I'm sure a lot of our listeners know this already, so I apologize to you. But if you look for a Tesla Model Y, like the cheapest one you can find is like basically like $60,000, and you can buy your own for way less than that. Yeah. So it's, you know, if that, if it's something that you've been thinking about.
Kind of interesting. Roll the dice a little bit. I don't know. It's a $60,000 gamble, it sounds like. But
if it's something where you're like, at the end of this year, I'm going to get one, then you need to seriously reserve
it
today.
Get it now. Huh. That's so funny.
My other one, which is an equally lame endorsement, just
because. To be fair, Orin, I am thinking about buying a new car, but didn't want to buy one during the shortage and am not driving a ton. I might think about that.
Yeah.
Don't sell your endorsements short, man.
It's, I don't know. That one's a cool one. Also, I'm sure I've mentioned it before, but if you're into leasing, like Lease Hacker.
I know you love leasing.
Lease Hacker, HACKR.com is like the best place to figure out the best deal. But my other endorsement is someone that probably everyone knows. Her name is Julie Nolke. Do you know who she is? She's a comedian.
No.
She made a very viral video about her visiting herself from the future.
Oh, yes, I do know.
Explaining the pandemic to my past self.
Yes.
It has 20 million views on YouTube. Nolke, N-O-L-K-E is her last name. But I don't know if you know this, but there's 6 parts. She keeps updating the videos. Mm-hmm. So I caught up on all of them, and they're all really good. I mean, she's funny in general. She has a lot of other videos that are funny, but her explaining the pandemic to my past self are really funny. And she matches her wardrobe, like her past self wardrobe, to the previous future self.
Mm-hmm.
It's like really clever if you like watch them all in a row. Like in the one that just came out 4 days ago, she like, this is a spoiler, but she reveals like that Betty White's like no longer alive. In each video, the past self is like, we got out of this, right? Everything's fine. Yeah. The world is normal again. And it's just like, every time it's just worse than before. Anyhow, Julie Nolke, check out her Explaining the Pandemic to My Past Self series. So good, so funny. But that's it.
Hey, we did it, Orin.
We did it.
Yeah, we'll see. We usually get an email every once in a while that's like, hey, I moved to LA thanks to you guys.
Yeah.
And I wonder if anyone will be like, I stayed in my hometown thanks to you guys. I just am repped internationally with this huge company.
Yeah, I almost got this amazing job, but they told me I had to live in LA. Anyhow, thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. JustShootItPod@gmail.com. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/JustShootItPod. At the $15 level, you get a free Just Shoot It hat, which is very cool. I'm mailing a couple tomorrow, which is Tuesday because the post office is closed today.
This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. And you can follow us across all social media at Just Shoot It Pod and me at Mr. Madamlo.
And I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram. I'm at Smitey Pileg on Twitter. Feel free to leave us an iTunes review. Tell someone about the podcast. Help us spread the word. It's only been 45 years since we started this thing. It'd be nice to get some new listeners.
Yeah.
But seriously, folks, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.